you're at the door, you're about to enter a world of heavy lifting, power lifting, strongman, and everything in between. Think you're ready for this? Let's see, tough guy. It's time for the RX Power Hour with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. This is the RX Power Hour.
Welcome to the RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. I'm very pleased to be joined tonight by our first bodybuilder on the Power Hour. Really the only bodybuilder who deserves the title of being on the Power Hour due to his strength accomplishments as well as his bodybuilding accomplishments. Very pleased to be joined by Tom Prince. Tom, how are you?
Hey, guys. How are we doing? Doing excellent. Thank you very much. Thanks for asking.
Great, great, great. How's the weather out there in your part of the world?
You know, yesterday it was like 88 and sunny, not a single cloud in the sky. It was warm, beautiful, and California's like that most of the year. You know, for whatever faults anybody thinks California has, you know, you're naming those faults while it's 65 degrees in January and sunny, and you know, you're on the golf course. So
exactly, yeah, it just doesn't seem that bad at that point.
Exactly. I remember how many times that we'd leave the gym and like me and Bob Ciccarello together, and Bob would go, "Hey, Tommy, you want to go hit a bucket of balls?" And you know, that was, you know, sort of funny. I mean, you know, and Bob would, of course, go do it. You know, go right from the gym, we'd go eat at the firehouse, and then he'd be, you know, off to hit a, you know, bucket of golf balls out of this driving range. It was right on the way home for him. It was literally a golf course like 5 minutes down the street from his first apartment.
Right.
You know, and California just, you know, again, if you like being outside and you like, you know, doing that kind of stuff, it's perfect for you.
Yeah, there's no rules. If you want to be outside, you can have at it and find something to do, that's for sure.
California's like that. California doesn't have many rules when it comes to anything, you know. You can, you know, definitely, you know, there's so much racial diversity here, you know, as far as with meals, with, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to wear, you know, you can wear white clothes, you know, after Labor Day, you know, nobody cares, whatever it is, anybody out here is fine with. I never quite figured it out whether, you know, everybody out here is so into doing what they do, like they're so selfish that they don't notice what you're doing, or everything goes. You know what I mean? I mean, because you could also, you know, look at it another way. You could cover yourself in gasoline and light yourself on fire and jump out of a plane, and you'll find somebody to do it with you.
That gasoline, right, so, training partner.
Right. Is that, you know what I mean? So I don't know if it's that everybody's that open-minded or everybody's so selfish they don't care what anybody else is doing. But that's California for you.
Well, Tom, I'm definitely looking forward to having you on. You know, as a nutritionist, you know, as we talked on the phone, you know, having several pro athletes myself, you've done contest prep in addition to, you know, your own very impressive competitive background. Basically, you know, this show should be really good and informative for our listeners, as far as we're going to approach things kind of twofold. You know, a confusion, I think, especially in power sports, continues to arise on basically how to approach everything, be it training, be it nutrition, be it supplementation, whatever it goes. And often too frequently, I encounter guys kind of getting confused with going about things in a bodybuilding manner, yet that's, you know, kind of the farthest thing away from actually achieving your goal on the power and strength side. So kind of starting with that, you know, your strength is very well known. You can talk to any bodybuilder, you know, especially during your competitive time. And if you ask who is the strongest bodybuilder, they all say Tom. You know, what was the most impressive thing that they saw? They'll say, one time I was in Gold's Gym and Tom did this. You know, so where does the strength background come from with you?
I mean, I think originally, you know, probably just like everybody else, you know, I mean, I started when I was real young and I was lifting weights for, you know, a totally different reason. I mean, and this goes back to when I was like 9 years old, you know, just lifting, you know, doing just a single bench press, like, you know, or maybe like two sets of bench presses, you know, once a week in the basement with my dad. And was doing that because I was a swimmer when I was a little kid and all growing up. And I mean, that was like the very beginning of it. So, you know, especially when you're young, and, you know, I'm not going to go way back to when I was 9 or 10, but just move forward a little bit to when I was like 16. You know, the only way you know to up the intensity on everything is by raising the weight. You know, you're still a, you know, generally speaking, you know, from a bodybuilding point of view, you know, you're still a long way away from, you know, really making the weights or the machines work for you, really feeling each rep, really feeling the contraction and all that. I mean, it takes a long time to develop that feel and that, you know, that mind-muscle connection, really. You know, so the only way you know how to make anything intenser, or make more intense, intenser, kind of English major, nice, huh? Make anything more intense is by having the weight go heavier, you know? And the only way you can really tell that, well, am I getting stronger? Am I improving? You know, what's the only gauge I really know to see if I'm improving is to have the weight go up. You know, so that's the one thing that you focus on. You know, you focus on let's keep the weight moving up. By definition, if the weight keeps going up and I'm getting stronger, I must be getting bigger. Right. You know, now that sounds very elementary after the fact and now, but, you know, at the time, again, especially with 16, 18, 20, 21, 22, you know, all the way until I was 25, you know, that was the main thing, you know? So, I mean, that was the genesis of it. That's where it started for me.
And in addition to that, now you were a very highly competitive swimmer. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was my senior in high school, I was the fourth fastest kid in the country in my event, which is 100 breaststroke. Yeah, I still got the All-America list with me on it. and really proudly, I look at that list and two of the guys that were ahead of me, David Wharton and Michael Berriman. Mike Berriman won the 200 meter breaststroke in the 2002 Olympics in the 1992 Olympics, pardon me. And Dave Wharton got a silver medal in the 400 IM and then in the 88 Olympics in Seoul, Korea. So it was in a pretty good company with those guys, you know?
Yeah, great company.
Definitely. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, most people, you know, my favorite question, of course, is, well, how does swimming and bodybuilding relate? Like, how did you go from one to the other? And like, well, they had nothing to do with each other. You know, we lifted weights for swimming, but yeah, truthfully, I just, you know, just happened to love both of them. That's all.
Do you feel that it contributed in any way from a bodybuilder perspective to your structure as far as, you know, the broad shoulders and you know, everything that's entailed with swimming, you know, with shoulders being so key?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know if like my structure and shape and all that. I mean, definitely keeps your waist small. You know, you develop like great abs and a small waist. To be honest, like the one thing that swimming gave me more than anything, by far and away, was my work ethic. You know, that work ethic, I can think back to being 10 years old and going to our swim practices in the morning would start and go from 6 to 8:30 in the morning. And we'd come back and go from 3 to 5 at night. That's just 4.5 hours a day as a 10 year old, you know, it got more as we got older, you know, as we got older, when we were 15, then, you know, you had like another half an hour of swim practice in there a day. And then you also had, you know, going to lift weights an hour a day, 3 days a week. And, you know, this became like an amazing amount of time devoted to this. You know, and ultimately it paid off for me, obviously. But it, you know, like I said, there's a whole ton of time that goes into it. And it does help you, you know, develop like a great work ethic. You know, so much so that, you know, that obviously, that carried over into bodybuilding very well. Certainly carried over into going to, you know, in school and in college very well. I still think like it's still working, you know, in my business now, you know, that everything, you know, I never was good at anything like great at anything just sort of by accident. You know, it only came with this, with a tremendous amount of work that went into it. So the only way I know how to make anything work and go well for myself or produce any kind of real results is by having that great work ethic.
It makes complete sense, you know, and that type of structure, like you said, as far as with bodybuilding, what it requires and just every aspect of your life, you know, I can certainly see how that carries over. At what point did you basically start really pursuing bodybuilding? And everybody's going to want to know, you know, there's 18 versions of how big was Tom Prince when he started bodybuilding or whatever, you know, basically what size were you when you kind of went ahead and got serious with it?
Yeah, when I got done swimming in college, I was 100 and somewhere between 190 and 195. I'm 5'8 and a half. Right. That's when I was swimming in college. In that first year, so I started off, I'd say, say 192, you know, right in there somewhere. You know, and swimming, I didn't weigh myself on a scale every day, you know. But after that first year, I'd gone from, you know, that 190-ish area to 248, somewhere in there. You know, in a single year, you know, and that was what really sort of led me think that, you know, maybe now they had some natural genetic predilection for this.
Yeah,
you know, there's something to it that, you know, and again, I don't mean to be cocky about that at all, but I just didn't see other guys doing that. You know?
Now, did you have someone helping you with your training in that first year? Because even if you have great genetics, most guys, when they first start training, they go in there and they pull some workout out of Flex magazine or something like that, which will work if you have good intensity and proper diet. But very few novice weightlifters have, you know, the correct diet or the correct workouts. Did you have, you know, a mentor that kind of showed you the ropes when you got into it?
I did, as a matter of fact. There was a national level bodybuilder. His name was Pete Anagnost. And this was when I stopped swimming in college. It was after my junior in college. So, you know, for my senior, I didn't, you know, my wife just had a baby. So, you know, basically swimming, even though I was on a full scholarship, no money was coming in from it. You know, and at that point, you know, because I was married, you know, we had the ability for me to finish up my senior on without having to have the full scholarship. So, you know, because I was in college, I could only go to the gym really from 6 to 7, 7:15 in the morning. There was a guy in the gym that was a national level bodybuilder. He and I were pretty much the only two in the gym. I mean, there was a smattering of a few other people, but it was pretty much just me and Pete. And then, you know, basically after just striking up a little conversation with him, and, you know, he offered to show me a few things, and I was, you know, more than happy to learn. And all I really needed was me spotting him. Yeah, I didn't really know how I was going to be helping him in any way, but and not at 190, you know. And the faster we, you know, the more we progressed together, the more I could help him, you know. And like I said, by the end of the year, I was 248, and it went very well. I mean, it was great, though, to have somebody, you know, show you, like, you know, I knew how to do it, like a bench press or a leg press or, you know, maybe a barbell curl, the simple things, you know. But there were some exercises, like, you know, training, like shoulders and side laterals and rear delts and, you know, the one arm reverse grip, cable tricep pushdowns, and, you know, little things like that that, you know, I'd never even thought ever seen before. And he was there for all that. So it was really, that was really, like, interesting. And, you know, having him, like, show me one, I mean, that's a great, I mean, I can't, you know, I don't have any words for how much that helped me, having somebody who's already on the national level pointing out all these things. You know, the food part, and, you know, he was, you know, Little Pete, what everybody called him, Little Pete. So Little Pete was pretty, he was a caveman when it came to his eating. You know, everything was tuna and rice and, you know, chicken and potatoes and, you know, maybe a steak in there once in a while. But, you know, I know he worked in a, God, what did he do? He worked in like a wood mill. and so he had to take all his food with him, you know, and because he was making his food, he just took the simplest things with him and threw them in his Tupperware. You know, again, the same story you've heard a million times, but, you know, that's what he was eating, and you know what? He looked great, so that's what I was going to eat. That's how I started eating, and I mean, I'd probably learned how to eat like that and stayed with that for 8 years. You know, all the entire time I was an amateur.
Oh, man, that sounds brutal, just chicken and tuna all the time. I can barely get through one chicken meal finishing all my food. But now in those beginning years or even later on, would you say you followed a particular training philosophy? Like, you know, like, say, a Jay Cutler or Arnold, they're big on volume-type training. Did you do a particular one, or did you kind of bounce around and change it all the time?
No. I definitely had a particular, like, training style. And I would say it was mostly powerlifting with a few bodybuilding exercises thrown in. Yeah, everything was pretty much built around, you know, doing heavy, you know, heavy benches, you know, deadlifts and squats. And, you know, we do heavy, like, incline barbell presses, you know, heavy barbell rows, you know, like closed grips when you're doing tries. But everything was kind of like powerlifting related. And then you like add in like one or two, like, well, I'd say like two or three bodybuilding exercises with it. And that was it, you know. The volume wasn't that heavy. Not that high in the number of sets, but, you know, we trained real low reps and tried going real heavy, and, you know, and I thought it worked unbelievably well for me. I can sort of list off, like, I could almost even list off the exercises that we did, and there weren't that many.
Yeah, and that's something, like, that didn't shift? Like, you stayed with it?
I stayed with that through, I mean, the only thing that changed that really was when I started getting, like, my knees started to get a little bit tender when I was like 25.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, I stayed with that for a long time, you know, a long time. Yeah, but like little, I mean, again, I mean, it's not going to, like, if I said it out loud, if I said back and we started off with deadlifts, so we would do like three sets of deadlifts off the floor, three sets of deadlifts out of the rack from like your knees up, you know, and then three sets of closed grip pull downs, three sets of T-bar rows, and three sets of dumbbell shrugs, and that was back. You know, but in just saying that, like, I don't mean to get too much into the X's and O's of it all, but, you know, like I said, it was built around sort of trying to be a powerlifter. You know, I guess I was pretty fortunate that, you know, my shape sort of came with it. You know, I didn't have to do anything like magical to make like good shape come. Like the muscle just sort of grew the right way, you know. And in doing I was strong too. So
now speaking of that, and blessed with the shape and the muscle kind of growing that way, you know, I'm going to have to stop you right now, basically, and we're going to have to cover your hamstrings because at the end of the day, the biggest hamstrings that have ever set foot on a bodybuilding stage. I don't know, maybe the biggest hamstrings and or legs that have ever walked around. I'm not sure. But everybody has asked me repeatedly, you know, hey, do you know anything about how Tom Prince did to get his legs like that? So hamstrings, Tom, what'd you do?
I'm tell you like at least one exercise that I did that I rarely saw anybody else do. I did do stiff legs on the Smith machine, like primarily. And I'll even just sort of describe how I did it, then that makes it a little bit different. When you're at the bottom, like I said, so when the bar would be down, like basically touching the top of my feet, like almost where it hits your shins.
Right.
And then when I was, we would be down like that. Would the bar would be touching, like I said, where my feet like hit my shins. But my upper body, if you're actually watching me, my hamstrings were locked back, or my knees were locked all the way back. I never kept my knees bent. Okay, they're always locked back. And I would actually be leaning back, like hanging onto the bar. So if I actually let go of the bar, I'd go plop down on my butt. You know, like I would literally fall over. You know, fall down on my butt. So that, and what you were doing, like if you took all the weight off it, like off the bar, it would almost look like I was stretching. You know, like I was stretching out my hamstrings. And at the very bottom, you'd stretch real hard against the bar. And then as you pulled the bar up, you sort of pulled yourself closer. You sort of pulled your like your upper thighs and like your midsection to the bar. I hope I'm describing this right.
Oh yeah.
In other words, can you guys picture this in your head at all? that's what I'm trying to do anyway. And like I said, I never saw anybody else do that. And I could do that I kept the reps fairly low. Like even my first set it would be three plates on each side for like, you know, like 15 reps. But you know, I could do that up to, you know, 495 or like 550. Never really went too much heavier than that, even though I could, but I was real, little bit, you know, just trying to be careful of my lower back. You know, like you can't, because you're in, you know, you're putting your back in a real tenuous position, stretching out that far, you know, but, you know, and I do it up to like five reps. That was usually the first thing I do, four or five sets of stiff leg deadlifts like that. I mean, other than that, lying leg curls for, again, it's real heavy. Never went above eight reps, really. Everything was in the 4 to 8 rep range. Single leg curls, same thing, you know, 4 or 5 reps to up to 8 reps. And, you know, and that was about, usually did like somewhere between 9 and 10 sets. I always trained hamstrings by themselves. I never, ever, ever trained them with quads. You know, to me, I thought, you know, I used to watch other guys and see people do, you know, 15 sets of quads and whatever, you know, now they're exhausted, and then go do hamstrings and they do like 3 sets and then they're done. I remember even talking to one pro bodybuilder who was asking me what I did for my hams, and who even told me that exact same story. He's like, you know what? But the truth is, I really don't train them hard because, you know, I do them after quads, and you know, I'm like, well, do you need to really ask me that, or do you already have your own answer?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and a lot of people, a lot of people just don't like doing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when I was at, you know, quasi bodybuilder. It was before I got into strength sports and stuff, and I was doing the normal bodybuilder routines. For me, it wasn't even so much that I was tired going into hamstrings. It's like my low back would be totally shot. And so you go to lay down on a hamstring machine, you know, be it seated leg curl, lying leg curl, whatever, and you start doing that, and you know, your hips are moving and your back's already tight as shit, and you're just like, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That, you know, quads are that hard, and quads, nothing kicks your ass like quads do. So, you know, most people just, when they, you know, they're either completely out of energy or just don't feel like doing it. You know, like anything else, if you prioritize it and you do it on, like, as a body part on its own, treat it like it's its own individual body part, you know, you'll get a lot better results that way. You know, as you can tell, like what I just told you about what I do for hamstrings, I don't think there's anything magical in there. You're not listening to that going, oh my God, exactly. Stuff like deadlifts, lying leg curls, and seated leg curls. I never thought of that. No, everybody does that. You know, of course. You know, it's just a matter, you know, like anything else, like how hard and how heavy you do it, and, You know, how much, you know, like I said, how focused you are and how tense you are when you're doing it.
Tom, one thing that I wanted to cover, because, you know, Nathan's my nutritionist and I'm a strong man, and we cater, essentially the show caters to strong men and powerlifters. Now, obviously, these are two sports, just like bodybuilding, that the lifters are, some are going to be natural, the others are going to be enhanced. And the one thing about, you know, you in particular is you are strong. You kind of were essentially a powerlifter that was doing bodybuilding. And I think a lot of people in the strength sports don't understand the health risks that come along with using the drugs. And, you know, being that you've had issues, you know, whether it was a genetic or caused by drugs or whatever, I think you'd be a good person to kind of enlighten some of the people that are listening and maybe even be able to tell them how to take some precautions. Because obviously no one's just going to say, oh, well, he got hurt, I'm going to stop, you know?
Right.
And Tom, that's kind of like you and I, the way, you know, we talked on the phone regarding, you know, the kind of monkey see, monkey do attitude, you know, and Ryan's right, you know, it's a whole different world compared to what a bodybuilder does, you know, if he's enhanced for a contest compared to what, you know, a strongman does or a powerlifter does, you know, because that bodybuilder, the hardest thing he might have to do during his contest prep is walk up the flight of stairs to his apartment, because it's a completely different style of training kind of at that point compared to the pro strongman or the powerlifter who's going to deadlift, you know, 850 pounds or whatever that day. And just the natural blood pressure impact that alone has, having nothing to do with the gear.
Right. You know, it's not, first of all, you know, when it comes to, you know, the gear and stuff like that, I mean, if, you know, I wish I could tell you how many times I told people that I actually went to a doctor and I was actually getting my, you know, blood levels checked and, you know, getting my blood pressure checked, getting my creatinine level checked, which that's your kidney function, you know, determines how well your kidneys are doing, getting your liver function checked. You know, I would tell people I was doing that, like I'm almost embarrassed to admit it now that I didn't really do it that often. And, you know, just thought like somehow I would feel it or I would know it. And, you know, there would be some sign that, and I mean, you know, sort of kiddling used to also say like, oh, listen, if I wake up pissing blood, I'll know that I'm done. You know, and of course that never happened. And, you know, having your kidneys failed, you know, I'm still going to dialysis today. It's been 8 years now, you know, that you do never feel anything. You know, there's no, I mean, I've had people tell me like, oh, you know, no, my kidney is hurt. I can tell. And they're putting their hand on their back, like somebody gave them a kidney punch, like a boxer gave you a kidney punch. Like,
right.
Like you really, you don't feel anything. I promise you, there's nothing, your kidneys have no feeling. There's no nerves in there that work that way. You know, they'll just stop working and that's it. You know, they slowly get worse. You know, you need to, there's other secondary signs that you've got to be looking for and you've got to even pay attention. You know, little, and something little like one of the secondary signs is, you start holding water. Like, well, if you're a bodybuilder, that might matter when you're real close to a show. I notice I'm holding a little bit extra water. But even 2-4 weeks out, nobody even looks or cares.
Right.
You know, if you're not real close to a competition. I mean, if you're a strongman or a powerlifter and you're holding an extra 10 pounds of water like that, if you're a bigger, especially if you're a bigger guy, like nobody really cares. Because nobody, you're
exactly.
Not being judged on what you look like. As a matter of fact, that might make you look stronger and you might feel bigger. And your clothes are all of a sudden tighter. Now, hey, you know what? This is great.
Well, you know? And on top of that, how is a, say, a we'll just say powerlifter in this case, how is a 300-pound powerlifter that's on, you know, whatever injectables plus, say, Anadrol on top of that, going to notice any additional water from their kidneys starting to fail?
Absolutely. I mean, you're not talking about like 50 pounds of water. You're only talking about, you know, like a few pounds. You're only talking like might be like 4 or 5 pounds. And again, just like you said, you know, 300 pound guy, 55 pounds of water isn't that much. I mean, it's nothing, you know? So, yeah, but that's the first thing, you know, I mean, just using the common sense and saying, hey, you know, I should at least go to the doctor once a year, you know, and get my blood pressure, taken, have them check out my creatinine levels, you know, if you're going to be using shit, you know. Second thing, and I'll admit to this one too, you know, your receptors can only take so much.
There you
your
go.
Receptors can only handle so much. And, you know, One of the things that bodybuilders do, you know, I don't exactly know what like strongmen and powerlifters do, as far as like how they talk to each other in the gym. Okay. But, you know, one of the things bodybuilders do is that there's always somebody around that, this guy's taking tons of shit. And because I can name one or two guys, and there's two guys that we used to talk about all the time. And, I mean, this is everybody. This is, you know, me, Flex Wheeler, you know, Cormier Dillette, and I'm trying to think of my other friends that were in the gym at the time. Melvin Anthony, you know, talking about, like, you know, these one or two guys over here, they're because they're taking a ton of stuff. Well, if I'm just taking a medium amount, I'm doing okay because these guys are the real bad guys over here. You know what I mean? You've always got somebody to compare yourself to that makes you look better and, of course, feel better about yourself.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter how much money you're spending. This guy over here is taking twice as much, you know, so I'm doing okay, you know? And, you know, and the other thing, that's the first one that they use. The second thing, of course, is that, you know, that you can't name anybody that's ever died of steroids. You know, like, well, you know, and occasionally somebody would throw out the Lyle Alzado thing or whatever. But even that, well, we don't know that. That was growth hormone. That was, you know, some a few other things. That was a brain tumor. You know, but that's how steroids does get you. You know, like if it's going to kill you, it kills something else.
Right.
And then that's what kills you.
Yes.
You know, it's never directly steroids. It's steroids indirectly kills you. Or if it, in you know, like it makes your blood pressure go up. It gives you an enlarged heart. You know, like I said, you know, it can kill your kidneys, can kill your liver, you know,
right.
You know, and then the guys are, you know, and of course you've got the 11 other 10 guys go, oh yeah, but I've been taking stuff this whole time and I never had any of that. Therefore steroids aren't bad. You know, he must've been doing something else. You know, and there's always
right.
a way to rationalize your way around it.
Right.
You know, and again, at least, you know, again, I'm just purely speaking about the bodybuilders, but you know, and I would hear that all the time. And I remember hearing about it all the time growing up too. I mean, it goes, you know, from 20 to 35 until I was done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the easiest thing to do, by the way, the thing with the doses and all that, still, I still kind of go back to that. I don't know after having lived through it, you know, I mean, start to finish, you know, bodybuilding from day one to the last day I ever did it. You know, I tried every possible, like, you know, psycho combination and trying to figure out, like, what works best for me. And I never found that over a certain amount even helped. Like, once you got past, you know, literally like 1,200 milligrams total the day. I mean, I hate to give out numbers exactly again, but once you got past that amount, like any more than that is just an absolute friggin' waste.
Right, absolutely. And it's funny, the guys don't understand that. You know, they'll go 2, 3, 4, you know, and I'll try to ask them, okay, well, you know, I need to know what major differences we're talking about here when you start hitting 3,000 and 4,000, you know, compared to what you're experiencing on 1,000. Well, when it was all said and done and I dieted back down, I was up another pound and a half. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? You went through all that, like you say, money. You went through all that money. You went through all the health things that entails for a pound and a half. And like you said, at the end of the day, it just kind of comes down to misinformation and or I actually liken it to paranoia because I experienced that with a lot with the different strongman guys.
That somebody else is taking something that you're not, or they're
there
doing
you
more
go.
Than you're not, and I got to be doing more because I'm not, God forbid, it's just
there
that athletic mentality of I need to do everything humanly possible to be as best as I can, or to be the best I can on the day of the contest,
the
day of whatever, you know.
What's funny is just like in bodybuilding, you know, I go on a lot of bodybuilding boards and you'll hear people say, oh, well, this guy took, you know, I've heard of people taking 10 grams of stuff total in a week, you know, and I'm like, okay, if they did, they're retarded. But, you know, I hear the same type of thing on certain power lifters. You know, I've heard of guys that, you know, cruise on a 1,000 milligrams and then getting ready for a show, they're up to 4, 5, 6 grams. And I'm just like, really? It's like, if you need that much to get
the wrong sport.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just not willing to go to those levels. I don't even go to their cruise levels. You know, I'm just not there. I don't want to do that. But I don't know. It just seems absurd to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you guys tell me, do they do the same thing in powerlifting and strongman competitions as they do in bodybuilding? If somebody comes along that like sets like a new standard or gets a new whatever, like new world records, new whatever, you know, wins, all of a sudden wins a whole bunch of competitions. Somebody new, like I know when Dorian came along, the biggest thing was trying to figure out what he was taking different. Never,
yep.
How did he train different? How much mentally tougher is he than everybody? Oh, yeah, same with Ronnie. What's he doing different? Not what's he training different.
Oh, exactly. That's exactly
everybody's looking
what
for the secret. The secret. They're not looking for the obvious. Maybe you know what? Maybe he just busts his fucking ass.
On those same lines, I kind of have to act like the novice guy and say, I am curious, as someone who was a big bodybuilder, you know, you were 300 pounds in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
What do guys take? And I'm not asking this so other people can go do this. I really am just curious, because for the longest time, you'd see guys that were 300 pound power lifters and they would be fairly chubby or just, you know, they're not lean. They're not bodybuilder lean. But then all of a sudden you see guys in all these sports, and this is a fairly new thing, that are 300 pounds with abs. How the fuck is that even possible, you know, on just testosterone or just steroids? We'll put it that way. I just don't see how it's even possible.
You know what? I can answer that a little bit. I'll give you one thing. I can remember the first time I ever saw a 300-pound bodybuilder. Like, I still remember it clear as a bell. We were sitting in the audience at a show in Southern South Florida. This is when I lived in Florida. It had to be 1997. Nasrell, somebody came down there, and he was going to be the guest poser at that show. Just kind of kidding around during prejudge, and they pulled the scale out on stage, and he got on it. Okay, and he was like 299 and a half. Now, I'd never heard of anybody that was over 300 pounds at that point. Okay? Mm-hmm. He was like Roger Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile, you know, in track. And that all of a sudden, you know what? This guy made it to 300 pounds. And when I was standing next to him, he was only a couple inches taller than me. You know, like I think the Astro was 6 feet tall, but I'm going to, you know, when I was 5'8", maybe he's like 5'11", so he's like 2.5 inches tall or whatever. That was the first time that I ever went, well, if he can do it, I can do it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden that sort of gives you like a new, at least this is my mentality, that gave me like a new like way to go or like something else. That's a new goal to get to. You know, at when I was in Florida at the time and I was 285 in the offseason, I wasn't that far away from being 300 pounds, but it never really occurred to me to like shoot for 300 because I was already bigger than everybody else. I mean, like I said, I know that sounds cocky, but what it did was give you like just another goal and something else to go for. Like, I can be 300 pounds and still be in like good shape. You know, that's what you need to get to. All of a sudden that now you're busting your ass more in the gym because you've got a, like just another goal. You know, and it's an off season goal. It's not a contest dieting goal. You know, it's a, you know, and so of course you're trying to add more muscle to get it there for your contest too. But in the off season, you can be between 9-10% body fat, still look fairly lean, and be 300 pounds. You know, that became a goal. So, how did anybody do it? You know, I mean, it just gave most of us something else, like an off season goal to shoot for. And if you've got a great off season goal to shoot for and attain, then by definition, this should pay off when it comes time for the contest. Once I get rid of all the fat, there should be more muscle there, right?
Right.
I mean, again, in theory, I mean, I'm not saying this worked 100% this way for everybody, but in theory, that should be, it should work that way. You know, I thought, like I said, I thought that was a great off-season goal to have. You know, and then once you got to, you know, and of course, you know, what's the next step? You know, that's a great thing about goals. You know, you can reset them in the snap of your fingers. You know, like, oh, you know, made it to 300. Oh, can I get to 310? You know, yeah, absolutely. Let's try for 310. You know, and I really made it to about 312 right in there, and that was it.
312 with abs.
Yeah, definitely. But that's, you know, I mean, there's pictures on me. Like, I know there's pictures on me. If, like, you just Google my name from a couple of guest posings where I was 300. Actually, I'm looking at one right now because I pulled it up to sort of give myself something to think about before I called you guys. But, but I mean, really, it was just, you know, how do you do it? I mean, you know what? Just making it a goal and making it part of what you're doing. And, you know, you only have, you know, I look back start to finish bodybuilding-wise. You know, I only did 15 shows. Ever. It's every amateur show, every pro show combined. I did 15 contests ever. There's a whole lot of off-season training time in there needing something to focus on, you know, and just being that much bigger and that much stronger and keep moving yourself up the ladder, keep moving yourself up the chain as far as how much muscle you got. You know, that was a simple one. Mm-hmm. So that would be my answer for why there's guys that can get to 300 pounds or how I did it.
It makes complete sense, you know. And of course, if the bodybuilding historians, if you will, always say, well, you know, they'll look at the guys in the 70s, look at the guys in the 80s, and then start comparing it to the 90s, you know. And you do definitely see kind of a very pronounced shift in the kind of the physiques and where the guys go, because you see the body weights dramatically going up, you know. And of course, the first thing that everybody starts to point to, and especially I really think in the 2000s is the first thing everybody started to point to, you know, is of course the, you know, presumed high levels of GH at that point, which really weren't in play obviously in the 70s and 80s because of the technology. So you know, how much did that do you see basically paid a part in kind of being able to stretch and push the boundaries, you know, of course, combined with insulin and things, but just specifically speaking with the GH?
Well, you know what, everything to me comes up in my mind as a story. 1997 is the first year I remember the Serostim growth hormone coming out. And at the time when it first came out, I remember it being $1,600 a box. So $1,600 for the 7 vials of 18 I use in them. That was 1997. By the time I had moved to California, okay, and which is 1998, in May of 1998, so not less than 12 months later, you could get it out here for $675 a box. The lowest I ever got it was $350 a box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growth hormone went from being like super expensive to being really affordable.
Right.
And now I could get 4 full boxes, and that's all I ever needed for a contest. Pretty cheap. You know, I got it for, you know, that's $1,400 total. You know, so how does that change your physique? Again, when something becomes that much more affordable, guys can buy more of it.
You know? Exactly.
And that's, to me, that's the answer. That's just a simple, easy answer for that one.
I completely agree, you know, and I think that's why insulin became such a prominent thing, especially, you know, again, because of the 2000, because again, affordability, you know, you look at affordability, you look at how much you get out of the vial. I mean, the damn thing lasts forever, almost seemingly no matter how much you might take, and it costs nothing, you know, $30 or whatever. And you look at bang for the buck. And I think you're right. I think guys start thinking, well, holy crap, this doesn't cost anything. You know, I can.
Right. You know, and, you know, so people, you know, I mean, is that a big key? I mean, I would say it is, absolutely. And not only that, I mean, out here, I mean, again, I can't speak for everywhere in the country either, but,
sure.
Like, I don't think I'm giving away any secret, but, like, out in California, you know, there's, you know, West Hollywood was, you know, 15 minutes away from where the Venice Golds is. I mean, 15, 20 minutes away. There's people in West Hollywood that would come find you in the gym, knowing you were a bodybuilder, trying to sell you growth hormone. You know, and what I mean by this is for some of the, like, I hate to, and like, I'm not, you know, I mean this in, like, you know, nothing but the greatest way, because they were helping me, you know, but they'd come find you, you know, be certain gay guys that would get, that had growth hormone that didn't want to take it, would much rather sell it and have the money, and where could they go to get rid of it? Oh, you know what? If I go where all the bodybuilders are, I can find somebody that'll take it. You know,
yes,
that's how he's thinking, you know? You know, well, but now you get people actually trying to sell it to you, you know, that are, you know, doing it, you know, sort of behind closed doors, that kind of thing. But, you know, and, you know, like, here you go, you know, it's, you know, so it's easy and it's cheap, and why would I not do it?
Mm-hmm.
I do want to make this a little too scary for you guys.
Oh, no. Honestly, anything you say, I mean, any show, any board, anytime drugs get brought up, everyone wants to hear about it because everyone's curious. Even the guys who know, they're curious, what kind of like what you said, or you hinted at earlier. You want to know what the other guy's doing. So anytime it's brought up, you can get as much detail as you want and people are going to want to listen to it. So, I mean, that's not a problem with us at all. Now, do you think that some of your, you know, obviously drugs helped you get stronger, but you also probably had genetics to get stronger. Do you feel that lifting as heavy as you did all the time is what ended up causing a lot of your joint injuries?
Yeah. You know, I've got no cartilage at all left in my left shoulder right now. You know, that's only from just an overuse injury. You know, you just keep training it, and, you know, and things started to hurt a little bit. Like, hey, you know what, just warm up a little bit extra and keep training on it and keep training heavy. And, yeah, I didn't figure it out till I was like, I mean, till much later on. I mean, literally till I was like 34, you know, maybe 33, 34, that maybe I should start adding in some high rep sets here, you know. And, you know, I even sort of made that a game. I can remember being 34 years old doing, like shoulder presses with 225 and seeing how many times they could do this. Yeah, you know what? You know, and getting up to 28 reps with 225, you know, and just for, you know, just because. Well, the NFL guys can bench this. So I wonder if I can do shoulder presses with more than they can bench when they're doing the when they go to the NFL combines. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, like literally just giving yourself something else to keep yourself motivated in the gym. Because right. Trey was doing shoulder presses at 225 wasn't motivating at all without having something that he had to sort of play with, you know. But yeah, absolutely. Is that did that blow out my all my joints? Like, you know, I got both bad knees. You know, my back's killing me. You know, like I said, my shoulder just has no cartilage left. I can only get my left shoulder up. I can hold my hand just a little bit above straight out. So it's a little bit, my hands can get up to like my eye level, you know, if I try to lift my left arm over my head. You know, it won't go over my head at all. You know, I can get my hand up to eye level. But yeah, of course that did that. And it was mostly for my own stupidity. I mean, you know, my favorite line that I use, and I used this in the magazines before. I was busy using motivation when I should have been using common sense.
That's great.
You know, that's my favorite one. You know, that was so motivated that it wasn't, you know, just now you're just like, you know, imagine a horse with blinders on, like plowing everything out of the way as it goes, just using their hands in front of them, knocking people left and right, you know. And you know what? Maybe you're going to get, you know, bad. I mean, I remember the older guys in the gym when I was 23, 24 saying, you can't squat that heavy all the time in here. Like, you know, get the fuck out of here, you know. And, you know, like, again, that's because you're 35 and 40 years old, and, you know, I'm 23, you know, and you think you're Superman. You feel like Superman, so why shouldn't I do this all the time? You know,
because exactly.
You know, you're not thinking that far. Not only are you not thinking that far ahead, but you don't care what's going to happen 10 years from now. You know, that was, are you kidding? You know, you know, I couldn't see past tomorrow, so, you know, I wasn't worried about it at all.
Well, you know, and you brought up your shoulder, and coincidentally, about a week or two ago, Jim Quinn was on a show with Dave Palumbo, and they were talking about his shoulder is just totally fried, you know, from doing 150-pound dumbbell laterals and things like that.
Sure.
And, you know, I read somewhere online, I think it was back when you posted on bodybuilding.com and stuff, and you were talking about how all of your big lifts, you know, you use strict form, you know, and you were actually commenting on how you couldn't lift like Ronnie Coleman and so on and so on. And
yeah.
Mr. Quinn was talking about how somehow it got brought up about abbreviated range of motion. And mm-hmm. now he's, you know, he does personal training and things of that nature. He's a big believer in essentially, most of us would call it doing partial reps, but it's not really like a cheat rep. It's just not necessarily going all the way down to your chest on a bench press and not necessarily trying to get that extra stretch. It's almost like his belief is take the weight to where your body feels like it's good and then go back.
Right.
Is that something you've found now that you have all these injuries and you're still trying to train?
On some things, yeah. And so, you know, if you're training it, you know, again, if you're training for strength, that might be a little bit different. But if you're training purely on what your body looks like, or trying to, you know, change what your body looks like, you know, I don't think it is super important to do full reps and to do everything, you know, the way you were taught, like in the strictest sense of the word. You know,
right.
Because again, all you're trying to do is get blood in the muscle, and you're just trying to stimulate the muscle. You know, that there's many, many different ways of just stimulating the muscle. You know, and you know, again, the heavier the muscle, the heavier it gets. You know, the stricter I think you need to go so you don't hurt yourself. But absolutely, could you shorten the repetitions up some, and do partial reps? Like I said, I would call it partial reps, by the way. You know, but or do like a shorter range of motion on things to stimulate the muscle. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've certainly done that on biceps, certainly done that on chest, on triceps. I can't lock everything out all the way when I do triceps. Like, not, you know, I can't get that last 2 inches out of it. Just my elbows are, you know, way too tender to do that. But it absolutely, you know, doing that middle 60% of what would be considered a full rep, I think works tremendously.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And also, Tom, speaking of that, and, you know, am I right on this? Basically on the incline, you've got an incline bench of personal best of somewhere around 545 for two?
I doubled it and almost got the third one, yeah. Didn't quite get the third one. Got it like 3/4 of the way up. I didn't quite get it all the way up, yeah. But did 495 for six, 545 for two. That's funny you bring that up.
Unbelievable.
I've never seen anybody did hack squats with, got up to 12 plates on each side for three. I mean, what's that work out to? It's like 1,080, something like that.
Yeah, basically 1,100.
Yeah. You know, you don't want to hear lifts, do you?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what the show is. Oh, throw those lifts out.
please. Deadlifted, dorsal, squatted 805 in the gym. Like did 765 twice, got 805 once in the gym, no power suit. I couldn't believe I saw Ronnie doing that in that video with the power suit on. I mean, why? Come on. I mean, the bodybuilder doesn't need to use the power suit.
Without it, I was curious.
Just knee wraps and a little and a belt, not like a power belt. I mean, like a little leather bodybuilding belt.
very true.
Yeah, did incline dumbbells with the 200s for 8, and they're a little too wide though. You know, I'm not tall enough to those are banging you almost in the chest when you're coming down that far, or when you're trying to come down too far. I'm not quite built the same way Ronnie is. I got long arms on that. Deadlifts are, like I said, deadlifted 700 for 5. I can't think of anything else right off the top of my head that was super interesting to anybody. Like dumbbell curls with 85s for 5. What else? Yeah, closed grips. I did closed grip 495 for 5. Yeah, I actually thought I was better doing closed grips than I would have been in benching, actually. Just because I couldn't, like the wider I held my hands, the more hurt my shoulders. That's about it.
Well, and I think the numbers, the reason Nathan was telling you to go ahead and say some of them is, given that we are primarily a strength show, it's having a bodybuilder on. Some people might be like, why the hell are you having a bodybuilder on? Yeah, he's strong for a bodybuilder, but they don't realize some of the strength that you do have. You know what I mean? So that kind of puts a little legitimacy on as far as why you're on the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's strong for strong, period.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. After, I will tell you one thing I did. I did find that as I got a little bit older, that you needed to figure out other ways to make the weight more intense other than just making it heavier. You had to learn how to feel the weight better. And I actually started realizing, I started getting more out of it by, doing the reps slower and squeezing everything, that much harder. That just making the weight heavier wasn't the only way to make everything grow, and that it could almost be counterproductive, but, it looks cool to everybody else. It's definitely fun. Bob Chigarella used to say this to me all the time, like having strength, and he was commenting on, me and how I trained, and he goes, for you, it's like, being strong is like having a Ferrari. Like once in a while, you just got to drive it fast. Like you can't drive it 55 all the time. There's no, what's the fun in that? So the cool thing, so anybody who's strong, of course they want to use it. hey, what can I do with this? Let's do something with it. That part of it's fun. But, like I said, as long as it's not tearing you apart in every other way. Every other way, meaning like tearing your joints apart.
Right.
Sorry, you'll hear me talk about that a lot since, after the fact, I ended up with all these joint problems,
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of during that time, as far as, you're pushing the boundaries, your strength is obviously, like I said, the strongest bodybuilder as far as I'm concerned, especially during that period and going through the whole, everything that you have to go through for competing. Did you notice that you had to alter your diet a lot between, say, when you first turned pro and, the 2001 Night of Champions? Of course, that's the show where everybody says, that's kind of their ultimate Tom Prince, basically. Did you alter things a lot during that time or, kind of, and if you don't mind, can you kind of give us, I guess, an example of the diet too?
I wish I would have, to be honest, I did change it some, and I wish I would have kept it much more simpler, much more of the way I originally learned, when I first did the Nationals in 1995. Like, if I look at my 2001 Night of Champions diet and what I did at my very first Nationals in 1995, just those two shows, they're unbelievably similar. Shockingly similar. The food was a little bit, my protein was a little bit higher and I ate a little bit more. I ended up weighing I was 237 at the Night of Champions. I was 238 at the 95 Nationals, so I ended up being 19 pounds heavier. But my protein's it's a little bit higher, but not much. My carbs are a little bit higher, but not much. Like everything I played around with just ended up making me smaller, Like the more, the smarter I got, so to speak, I absolutely got too smart for my own good somewhere along the way. You know, the more I tried to, like, you know, I got this, I had like a great formula in 1995. And, you know, I'm just going to tweak it a little bit. And I'm just going to tweak it a little bit. You know, I mean, not much. Just, you know, we're only talking like 2-3%, right? And then for a couple shows after that, while I was still an amateur, I was actually going backwards. Like, I'm gaining the experience, this experience, and somehow I'm going backwards. Like this is
overthinking.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm definitely overthinking the whole thing. And, you know, thankfully, I mean, very thankfully, out of the blue, Chad Nichols called me up before the 97 Nationals. I mean, I was seriously, like, debating either quitting bodybuilding or not going to diet for another year to year and a half. And Chad called me up out of the blue and said, you know, I'm really interested in helping you for this show. And it's like, you know, it was almost like, oh, thank God. You know, because I didn't know what I was going to do.
Right.
You know, and he, like I think, I mean, the best thing he did for me, like, if I actually looked on paper, like, again, if I looked at the X and O's of what he did with my diet, I just look at it and basically just lowered things just a little bit, but it was almost the same thing I was doing for myself back in 1995. But he was there to think for me, and I didn't have to.
Right.
And so I would actually tell people, like, what Chad allowed me to do, just he allowed me to be an athlete. Like, he's going to be the coach, and I'm going to be an athlete, and I'm not going to think. He's going to think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all I got to do is get to the gym and do the workouts. The rest of it, you know what I mean? The rest of it, you know, they'll tell me how much cardio to do. I mean, I had to tan for myself, and I had to work on my own posing, but all that's kind of mindless, you know?
Right.
And Chad, the thinking part of it, Chad's going to figure out. And that's exactly how it worked that year. And it was so much, it took a ton of pressure off me. And that was one of the other things. You know, I realized that, you know, I'd been putting a ton of pressure on myself because I'd been second to Nationals twice and second to USA once and been putting all this pressure on me. And Chad sort of took all that pressure off me. You know, I just could be an athlete. You know? Like, I wish, I mean, again, if I told you the actual diets and stuff, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's just egg whites and oatmeal in the morning and chicken and rice or chicken and rice, steak and rice, or turkey and rice for the rest of my meals. There's nothing, you know, just mediocre stuff, you know? You know, they're the same stuff everybody else does, you know?
Exactly.
My carbs made it down to, like, 250 grams of carbs a day, 275 grams of carbs. Not that low. My protein was, like, at 300, 350. Not that high. My cardio, I wasn't doing, like, 4 hours of cardio a day. I was only up to, like, an hour and 45 minutes of cardio, which is, you know, most people do more than that. Or a lot of people do more than that, I should say.
Right.
You know, like nothing that spectacular, you know, just most of it was just, you know, just keeping everything, you know, keeping everything being very consistent. And I will say this about Chad too. Probably the first person that ever heard say, you know, you're actually fairly genetically gifted. Just let that work for you. Like, stop out thinking yourself. Just let your body work. Like,
right.
You know, that's actually, you know, rather than, you know, go super, super low with the carbs and then try to have these high days and go super, super high and you're jerking your body all over the place, you know, and you're wondering why it's not reacting correctly. Like, just let it do its own thing, you know? And, like, you know, again, like, it's, that sounds simple, but, you know, that most of the people that I've helped over the years, when I've helped people, it's amazing. Like, you start, you know, you put in food and you take the pressure off them by you doing their thinking for them. It's amazing how much better things work. You know, that stress can fucking kill you. That's, most people stress themselves way out. You know, put too much pressure on themselves to somehow make this work. And, you know, they get frustrated because they can't think clearly because they're dieting hard. And, you know, that just makes it worse.
Right.
That makes your question?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I think that's interesting is you actually, again, correct me if I'm wrong, from what I know, you basically, again, kind of simplified things. I believe it was somewhere around the Night of the Champions era as well, where you basically used modern conveniences to your advantage. And what I mean by that is, you know, when this wonderful invention called rice in a bag came out, you know, and you could literally just boil the frickin' rice in the bag in the pot, and it was literally a serving ready to go, you took advantage of that, you know, and you kind of made simplicity back in your life so that, you know, this thing didn't kind of encompass everything that you do, you know. And a lot of guys, the first thing that they'll complain to me is, oh, is this going to take up, you know, I don't have time to prepare my foods, or I don't have time. You know, if there's a will, there's a way. And if you just look at the options that are out there, you know, there are so many very quick, convenient options, like the, you know, 3 packs of instant oatmeal for breakfast, or the boil and bag rice or whatever. You know, there's really no excuses.
No, absolutely. I mean, I saw, and so you go with what you just said there. You know, I used to also have a there's a gas station by me. This is when I lived in California. There's a gas station by me that used to sell like a dozen eggs. They would sell like a dozen eggs for, I can't remember the price exactly. I want to say a dozen eggs was like 99 cents or 79 cents. So I'd go in there and I'd buy my 15 dozen eggs all at once. And and that was it, you know. Yeah, but you're right. Like I said, like the you know, the rice, the bags of oatmeal. I used to also have another thing where I would tell people, anybody helped, but I learned this just from doing it myself. Never, ever, ever make a special trip to the grocery store. Or never make a special trip out of the way when you're dieting. In other words, everything gets done either on the way to the gym or on the way home from the gym. Mm-hmm. Okay. And by the way, never stop at the grocery store on the way home from the gym. You know what I mean? Don't go in the grocery store when you're hungry.
You'll get to know Little Debbie real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but I don't. You know, so I. You know, when I. You know, when I was dieting, I'd go to when I. My first workout would start at 4:30 in the morning. So it was real easy to stop at, it was real easy to eat my food at the gym with my first meal. And then, I'd stop at the bank, stop at the grocery store on the way home from the gym. On my second workout, like I said, on my way back from the gym, that was when I would stop at the tanning bed, stop at the gas station to put gas in the car. I would never go, unless I absolutely had to, make a special trip out on its own. To me, that was like just wasting energy. Right. In other words, if I've got time, as a pro bodybuilder, one of the luxuries you have, or at least I had, because of contracts and all that, was to not have to, work a full-time job. So time in between the gym was for resting, And that way you could, purely just, I'm going to use this and rest. I'm not going to use this to go run errands, Right. maybe do laundry, but I had a washer and dryer in my place, so I didn't have to go anywhere. I could throw that in there while I was watching movies or watching Sports Center or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Tom, like you said earlier, you did basically like 16 shows your whole career, so you had a lot of off season time to grow and to build. When you were in the off season, did you still eat fairly clean, or did you pull a Lee Priest and hit up KFC or McDonald's after every training meal?
When I was younger, when I was coming up, I ate like super, super clean. And I actually got to a point when I was, this is after I'd already won nationals, but I was 28 when I won nationals. I ate like really, really clean once, like all the time. And, I was working a full time, I was working a job too, though. I had to work at a gym. The contracts I had in metrics, even when I was an amateur the last couple of years, wasn't enough to live on. So you had to have a job. And this is just easier to take clean food to the gym rather than you could bring a boiled bag of rice to the gym with you to make in the microwave, and I ate super clean. And I remember right after I won having a talk with Chad Nichols, it was one of the other things Chad did for me. I'd ask him, I've been at somewhere between 280, 285 in the off season now for like 3.5 years. I'm sort of stuck here, where most people would say, that's not really stuck. Maybe you're getting leaner at that, then you're just holding your same weight, I still thought, the scale should continue to be growing up or going up because, I'm busting my ass in the gym training. And Chad was actually the one that asked me, how are you eating? I would tell him, you're eating way too clean. Here's what you do. At least once a day, you got to go out and get some shit food. McDonald's, pizza, anything. And I don't even think he said it that way. He said, start eating a little bit of junk. And I was like, what do you mean? Like going to like a restaurant for food and getting the spaghetti and meatballs. And he was like, I mean, stop at Wendy's or get a pizza. Just add calories. You're not eating enough. And he actually told me, he's like, tell me what you eat during the day. And just real quick, I went through it and I could see his point. As soon as he said it, I was only eating 3,800 total calories in the off-season. Most of the diet was between 2,800 and 3,200 calories. You're barely eating more than what you eat when you're dieting. Mm-hmm. Of course you're stuck. Of course you've hit a plateau. But I was fairly lean. So I thought I looked good, but that was actually absolutely hindering my progress. And it was Chad that actually told me, you're just going to need to go out and, get some more, just get some food in you, So, what I started doing really was sort of eating restaurant, meals, adding restaurant meals in, you know, once a day, and then I'd stop at either Subway or Burger King, get a couple burgers along with the rest of the food I was eating. And then and the other thing I started doing is eating at, like, waking myself up at 2 in the morning to eat. You know, I've actually told a whole bunch of people this, but I'd wake up at 2 in the morning, I'd eat, like, half a bowl of cereal. Like, I'd use, like, literally half a box of Lucky Charms to pour in a mixing bowl along with chocolate milk, and I'd sit and eat it real quick and then go back to bed. And, you know, so I eat, I would say in the off season, I eat like 75% good, 25% not good. And that's what I do. And then, but by doing that, that's the only way I get enough calories in to keep myself, like I said, to get me from like 285 up to the 310 area.
Right. And there's definitely merits to that, because that's kind of the melting of both worlds, because you're right. At the end of the day, you know, there's just going to be times, especially at plateaus, where you've got to take the calories up. But what's just interesting is, you know, and especially in power sports, you know, because the physique is not the primary goal per se for a strongman or a powerlifter or things along those lines. You know, there's sometimes the thought that it's just calories, period. You know, and so that can be kind of a debate. And what's interesting is that still works. You know, and I you know, we'll kind of have fun debates on that, because it still works. I mean, if you take in 10,000 calories or something and you're, you know, a strongman competitor, 10,000 calories is still 10,000 calories. Something is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it be it now, if you're taking in 10,000 calories and the majority of it is clean and then there's some shit sprinkled in there, you know, at the end of the day, they're both going to accomplish a similar goal to some degree. But then you've got to look at how short term that progress is, because at the end of the day, you know, junk calories have a whole other spectrum of effect on the body. You know, that old saying, you are what you eat, of course. You know, it's
absolutely
kind of the same thing.
Cholesterol,
you know,
and blood pressure, and absolutely.
Exactly. And that's when a lot of things come into play. And it's just not as simple. You know, you do need the calories. You do need the calorie bump, you know, like you stated, of course. But the type of calories chosen, I guess, is the predominant type of calories. Still, you know, I think is very, very relevant. And yeah, you've done so many contest preps of your own, you know, and your guys always came in phenomenal. I assume that you probably kind of followed that same type of approach, because last thing you want is to balloon somebody up to, you know, 340 in the off season just to have to take them down to 250 to get on stage.
Right, definitely. You know, there's definitely, you know, there has to be, if you really think about it, like in its simplest terms, really, there has to be, and everybody's got this, there's got to be a point, and the problem is that we don't know where it is, but there's got to be a point where one extra calorie is too many, and now you're eating above your caloric intake level, and then one calorie below that is too low. There has to be a line in there someplace, because
right.
We've got like a metabolism and a, you know, that right. That line can sort of move, you mm-hmm. know, and generally for most of us it goes down, you know, as you get older, but certainly there's, You know, does, if you're eating, whatever, let's say you're, you know, that exact line on somebody's 4,000 calories, you know, is eating 6,000 calories going to make you put on muscle that much faster? Like, I don't think so.
No.
You know, I mean, all you really need to take into account is how much am I burning every day in my everyday life, and how much am I really burning when I'm training, you know, mm-hmm. and then try to figure out, like, how much more than that you need. You know,
exactly.
So if it's 4,000 calories between eating and training, and that's the break even point. So if I eat 3,990, it's too low. Now I'm actually, you know, now I'm not actually eating enough. You know, can I only eat 4,500? Is that enough?
No, you're exactly correct. And
you know,
what's funny
it
is
it should be that, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, there should be a point where you figure out that, you know, like I said, like going up to 5,000 calories isn't, you know, you're just putting on fat. And it's not actually helping you actually add muscle. You know, again, if you're a strength athlete, I'm sure that doesn't matter much. You know, as a bodybuilder, it wouldn't matter a lot.
And that's where it gets interesting, you know, is that a lot of these guys kind of don't understand, like, you know, when a bodybuilder, you know, if he goes up to, let's say in your case, you know, 312, 315 in the off season, and then you came back down for your contest prep, your contest weight compared to the prior show where you did the same thing, went up, came back down, you might be, what, 5, 6, 7 pounds heavier than the show before, if that, you know, at an IFBB pro level bodybuilder.
Right.
And you think about what all that entails to gain that 6 or 7 pounds of actual muscle. Now,
yeah,
you move that over to the strongman or the powerlifting sport where guys get kind of lost in the numbers, so to speak. And a guy will be happy because he's gone from 280 or 300 pounds. And, you know, his next competition, he competes at 345. It's like, if he only knew how very little of that was muscle, you know, when you're talking, say, a 90-day period,
right?
You know, I think it would blow his mind. Because, again, consider what the bodybuilder has to do, the pushing of the envelope, so to speak, for that 7 or 8 pounds. And, you know, I can tell you from on my side of things with the Powerlifters and Strongman, you know, it's nowhere near that level of envelope pushing compared to bodybuilding. But yet 30 or 40 pounds in 90 days, it's like, I hate to break it to them, you've maybe got 2 or 3 pounds of muscle that you actually
absolutely
put on. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. It's funny that you say that. You know, I used to think this, like all of the, like, you know, if you're, by the time you're a pro bodybuilder, if you can, in a 1 year time period, if you literally can put on 3 pounds of muscle between shows, you know, if you only did one show a year, like, let's say you only do them the Olympia, if you can put on 3 pounds of muscle in a year, that's a lot of muscle.
Exactly.
You know, the closer you get to or whatever your genetic limit is, you know, there has to be a limit, I assume. Like, you can't just keep that muscle forever. So
exactly.
The closer you get to that genetic limit, the more you've got to force on. The amount of energy and time that it takes in the gym to add those 3 pounds of muscle is incredible. And, you know, I used to, like, tell myself that and then sort of add on to that. You know, there's guys that train between two different Olympics in track and field and 100 meters that bust their ass for 4 years to go 1/100th of a second faster.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, and they got all the training and time that goes into that just to go that one, to go from a 9.85 to a 9.84 in the 100 meters. And most of them, when you talk to them, well, yeah, absolutely, that was 100% worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but most of them were so passionate and so driven that it would never even occur to them that why wouldn't I do that? You know, that's 1/100th of a second. That's the difference between me, you know, maybe winning a gold and getting fourth.
It's just so interesting to see how everything evolves, you know, both on the strength sports and, like you said, even with the Olympics. You know, I was talking with actually the head of the ASC Strongman company the other day, you know, and kind of kidding around, because it's like the way everything is evolving so fast, you know, what was an Olympic record, say 10 years ago or 15 years ago, wouldn't even get you qualified in a lot of cases to participate in the Olympics, you know, today. It's just astounding.
No, definitely. It's fun to watch, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm amazed at, like, how fast, like, when, you know, I can relate very well to that with swimming, obviously, because, you know, it hasn't been a swimmer. And I look at absolutely. Not only what was, like, an Olympic record, but, you know, like, what was the, I mean, the guys are, like, you know, 2-3 seconds faster in, like, 100 meters. Like, and that's such a short distance to be that much faster. It's incredible. You know? And, you know, as training improves, you know, back in the day, though, and, you know, like I said, and just in swimming, you know, nobody, you know, diet wasn't really a consideration. You know, that wasn't part of the whole regimen as far as, like, well, what can I do to improve?
Right.
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, the weightlifting, I think bodybuilding has brought some of that into play in every sport.
And that every
people
sport.
People started to look at, you know, bodybuilding is one of those things where, well, it's not just the weight training and now the dieting and, you know, the vitamins and, you know, and you're dieting and you're getting leaner and you're doing cardio. And, you know, bodybuilding is one of those things that you can do anything you want. And I mean that in a good way. Like, you can, you know, you're all in some ways good, some ways bad, probably. But, you know, you can take every possible avenue to make yourself better and you can use it. You know, where in swimming, you know, back in the day, if I go back to Mark Spitz's days back in the 70s, all you did was go to the pool and that was it. Nobody lifted weights. Nobody concentrated on diet. He didn't wear a cap. He didn't wear goggles. He didn't, you know, they shaved when they got to big meets. But there's 50 things they're leaving out that would be, like, so obvious, even to the most rank amateur. You know, I mean, any 8-year-old could put on a cap, and the reason you put on your cap because it makes you more hydrodynamic in the water, rather than having your hair hang out, and that hair holds water, and it gets heavy. You know, I mean, anybody that's ever had long hair and dunked in, you know, put your head under the water in a pool and then lift your head out, you know, that water, your hair soaks up that water, and now it's just 3 pounds of water that your hair's holding. You know, well, they didn't, you know, Mark Spitz had long hair. You know, they weren't doing that back then. You know, now they got the suits, the training. Now they take your, you know, they do the pinprick on your ear. This is the Olympic swimmers now. They take the pinprick in your ear and they take and they test your whatchamacallit level, your what's the word I'm looking for here? Your lactic acid level. You know, has it cooled down enough? No. You know what? Your lactic acid levels are still high. Go get back in the pool and cool down some more. You know, and they literally wait till you get to a certain point. They make them wait till they get to, and you keep warming, you keep cooling down until you get to the point where that lactic acid level drops. And, oh, okay, now you're done. Now you can wait to your next event, which might be in 10 minutes. You know?
Right.
It's really interesting how specific everything has gotten and how, like, mm-hmm. What high level they have these guys competing at.
Yep.
And across the board, it's interesting. You know, it doesn't matter if it's baseball or football or hockey or, you know, Olympic sports or whatever. At the end of the day, you know, they all kind of have their sport-specific training system. They have, like you said, you know, all these various types of training and equipment, the best coaches, the best everything. But at the end of the day, no matter how specialized it is for each sport, each one still comes down to nutrition is the only thing that goes across the board from every single sport there is, you know, and you can have access to all these things, you know, the greatest equipment or coaches or whatever. But in this day and age, if your nutrition isn't spot on to match you, you know, you'll go nowhere because like you said, there's always the guy behind you who is going to do everything and take full advantage of anything and everything at his disposal to be the best.
Somebody figured out along the way that your nutrition was your ability to recover, mm-hmm. and your ability for your muscle to recover and your muscle to heal. And if you weren't doing that, then you know obviously without that great ability to recover, then you've got a with a higher level to recover, you've got a you can train at a higher level. I mean, if you really think about what steroids do for you, I mean, isn't that really what steroids do for you more than anything else? It's not that it makes you as that much stronger, though that is. But more than anything, it's the anti-catabolic effect of a steroid, in that how it helps you how it helps your muscles recover, and because you're recovering faster now, you can train harder, and of course, the harder you train, the harder you can recover better, and you just one begats the other, and that's what helps you improve more than anything.
Yes, completely.
You know.
Now, Tom, I have to kind of bring it back to a story you kind of mentioned earlier, and I'm doing this because I know people are going to be sending me messages asking me why the hell I didn't ask. So, you know, what you decide to say is up to you, but everyone's going to want to know if you're willing to name the two bodybuilders that you're like, oh, well, they do this, so I'm still okay, or even what they were supposedly doing that you didn't
do. Titus and Milos Sarsef.
Oh, there you go. And actually, that's no surprise.
That was who we all talked about. I mean, I hate to, like, I don't mean to name them, and you know, I like Milos, I like a lot, but the better was Craig.
I think Craig doesn't really matter.
Those are the two guys I knew that were like that we thought were crazy. You know, there used to be a little story that some of the guys told, and I won't tell you who told this part, but one of the things about Milos that we used to say was that Milos was one of those guys that. You know, really thought, like, listen, you can take anything you want. You'll be dead 5 days after you win the Olympia. Like, if you can take whatever you want, as much as you want, you'll win the Mr. Olympia, and you'll be dead 5 days later. Would you do it? Absolutely. there was nothing that was too high or nothing that was too minor. I mean, if he could improve by, like, one molecule, he'd take 6,000 milligrams a week of shit.
So yeah. When I've heard
and,
him,
oh, absolutely, and it's funny because you bring up Milos, and he's, you know, he was very adamant about how his guys don't basically go over 750 milligrams, and this, that, and the other, and I used to kind of chuckle listening to that, you know, but you know that's neither here nor there. But again, you having firsthand knowledge of the water cooler speak as far as Milos, I guarantee it was maybe 750 times 10.
Yeah, absolutely, and tennis was the exact same way, and. With Milos, I can't, like, I didn't know him super well. You know, Titus, I used to see in the gym every day, though, and talk to him every day, basically. And even though we weren't, like, super, we're, like, close friends at all, but we're definitely, you know, gym acquaintances and stuff. With him, it was just pure, like, insanity, just, like, kind of like we were talking about earlier. Like, it was a contest, like, if I take more than anybody else, by definition, I will be better.
Yeah.
So I'm going to outdo everybody else. You know, that was, I mean, and like, you know, you're just shaking your head going, you sure that's good for you? Yeah. Like, I don't think it works that way. I really don't think it works that way, Craig, you know, but you couldn't talk him out of it, you know?
Well, and it's funny that you mentioned that doesn't work that way, because that's another thing that you can't get through the logic to a lot of individuals. You know, it's like if you take 2,000 milligrams of something, okay, let's say you're going to get, you know, 10 or 15 pounds up as far as the course of it, even though a very small percentage of that is actually muscle. You know, right. So does that mean if you do 4,000, you're going to double the effects? So if that logic, if I do 8,000, I'm going to double those effects, right? It's like nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, it's all simple mathematics, but nobody gets it.
No, and that's the craziness about it. You know,
well, and you being someone who didn't do whatever it was they were doing, you know, the increased dosages or whatnot. Looking back on your career, or even I guess you would say your life, but mainly your career is what, you know, we're referring to. Is there something that you would say, you know what, I'm not going to do that, whether it be lowering your dosages or doing bodybuilding at all? I mean, would you do something different knowing what you know now and what has happened with your kidneys and stuff like that?
You know what, I'm one of those people that absolutely believes like that I will not. Or I refuse to live with any regrets, you know, that I loved every, I don't want to say, you know, I loved every moment I had in bodybuilding. It was absolutely a dream of mine to be a pro bodybuilder from the time I was 10 years old. You know, the entire time I was swimming, I was literally just waiting to get done so I could be a bodybuilder. You know, that I absolutely would not go back. I think because what I could have done, I think I could have avoided by just a few trips to the doctor, that, you know, it's hard for me to like sit there and say I regret bodybuilding. It's not bodybuilding's fault. You know, it's not. I don't think it's anything that was related to bodybuilding that was bodybuilding's fault. You know, it's 100% my fault, my responsibility. And you know, whatever, my kidneys died, and you know, I absolutely own that. I own that. That was my fuck up. You know what I mean? It's not. Yeah, I'll give another example. I remember in 1993 when Muscle Media 2000 first came out, and reading an article that certain pro bodybuilder had in the time, and he just slammed bodybuilding like left and right. You know, and I remember thinking, like, well, you know, he retired when he was in his like mid-30s at least. You know, like, well, how did you not know this the entire time you were in it? And if you knew the entire time, that means you could have made the choice to quit or stop.
Right.
If you're a grown man, if you chose to keep going, you know what I mean. You can't say like, oh, I'm not making enough money, I'm not doing well enough, this isn't good for my health, but you're still plugging away in the sport. No, I mean, you know, I mean, and again, you know, then quit, you know? So you know the reality of it. You can't sit there and bitch about the reality if it's not changing, you know, or you're not trying to do something to change it. And, you know, like I said, so I absolutely don't regret it at all. Like, of all the stories I've got from bodybuilding, I've gotten, you know, thousands of great stories. Like, I don't think I would trade that for anything. You know, my kidneys are, you know, what happened to my kidneys only happened because I didn't take care of myself, because I was so busy trying to be a great bodybuilder that I didn't bother trying to be a healthy Tom Prince at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of that goes down to focus. You were completely focused, yeah, in essence,
focused, I actually hurt myself, you know, but, that's like an amazing chapter. That's such an amazing chapter in my life. And like I said, I've got so many great stories and so much fun stuff. I got to do so much, got to go so many places and meet so many incredible people. And I could go on forever with these, you know, with all this stuff. Like, you know, this radio show would be weeks old by the time I was done with half my stories, you know. But I just can't say like I regret any of it, you know, even for my kidneys. You know, when I go to dialysis now, you know, I work 70 hours a week at my job now. Go to dialysis. I still go to dialysis 5 days a week, or five. I'm sorry, 3 days a week, 5 hours at a time. I go from 4:30 to 9:30 in the morning, so I can be there before work mostly, and sleep, and that way I can go right to work. And you know, it doesn't bother me a little bit. Dialysis, it's not that bad. Eventually, I'll get a new kidney, and everything will be perfect. Still, you know,
excellent.
Sorry, I can only look at it in a positive way. There's no way I refuse to look at that in any way as negative.
No, I understand, you know, because it's all life experiences. And in a way, it somewhat mirrors like, you know, what a musician goes through. You know, I don't think any of the guys in the Rolling Stones, you know, regret any of the, you know, any of the things along the way. You know what I'm saying? It's all part of what made them who they were, and what made it was part of the success.
Right. I mean, yeah. And if you change that, doesn't that change who you are? You know, are you going to say the Rolling Stones weren't, you know, doing drugs like, you know, 90% of the time? That, you know, mm-hmm. maybe the music wasn't as good. Maybe the experience wasn't as good. Maybe they don't turn out who they are today. Maybe something, you know what I mean? Absolutely. Maybe it's Absolutely. Maybe they're not the Rolling Stones.
I agree.
Maybe we're, maybe we're talking agree. About somebody else. Maybe we're only talking about the Beatles in that era and not them too.
very likely. So
so who knows? And that's why I say, like, I there's no chance I can regret any of that. That doesn't mean anybody else should do it. I would caution everybody else to absolutely go to the doctor. You know, if you're gonna train and use performance enhancing drugs in any way, you know, absolutely take your ass to the doctor once in a while.
Absolutely. You know, Tom, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great, great show, a great interview. Like you said, you have so many stories and so many things that you can share with people. We'd love to have you back on again, you know, if you're willing.
I'd love to be on. I had fun with you guys. Thank you very much.
Well, excellent. Thank you, Tom. And one thing I'd like to interject here is mm-hmm. Tom, you can take your physique, you know, from the 2001 Night of Champions, and if you place that against the winner of every Olympia for about the last 4 or 5 years, that physique wins. Hands down, it's not even close. You know? So just thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, thanks. That makes me feel good. That's very nice of you to say. I appreciate it. You know?
Yeah.
And you only had to do it once. I did it my one time. That was it.
Well, and like Nathan said, we really appreciate you coming on, and we really appreciate you being very open about everything and not holding stuff back. I think that's what, you know, will make people love this interview for sure.
Oh, right on. Oh, absolutely. Very cool. Thanks, you guys.
Healthy Chocolate is revolutionizing the way people think about chocolate. Using a patented chocolate-based delivery system combined with a proprietary herbal formula to give you 10 times the auric value of other well-known antioxidants.
Auric? What's an auric?
That's oxygen radical absorbance capacity.
Is that ejectable or oral?
Just know that it's good.
Again.
Healthy chocolate from UltraFit360.com is comprised of 70% premium cocoa, is sugar-free, and...
Sugar-free? Will this stuff make me crap my pants during ass-to-grass squats? Because if so...
Excuse me, no, if I may.
Again.
Healthy chocolate uses no artificial sweeteners. The ingredients in healthy chocolate have been clinically shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels and...
Wow. Okay, when combined with GH, Slin, IGF-1, and various other peptides to conquer...
While we didn't intend to cause a revolution in the way the world thinks of chocolate, we nonetheless at UltraFit360.com welcome the dialogue that healthy chocolate has opened. Healthy chocolate. Fitness has never tasted so good. Visit UltraFit360.com today.
Hydrolyze Ultra, the leader in cellular hydration water. Hydrolyze Ultra water has been designed by shrinking and reshaping molecules to allow a faster and more sustained delivery into your cells. Our cellular water has gone through a magnetism and laser treatment process, along with adding electrolytes to our special ingredients. This allows all nutrients to be absorbed at a maximum cellular state. By using Hydrolyze Ultra, all nutrients, supplements, and carbohydrates you consume will be absorbed at a greater rate. Lactic acid gets flushed faster, and you'll feel fully hydrated. Get the advantage that top athletes have achieved. Try Hydrolyze Ultra today. Visit HydrolyzeUltra.com. That's HydrolyzeUltra.com. P28 High Protein Bread is the official bread of RX Muscle. Are you looking to incorporate more protein into your meals or just want to enjoy bread again? Then look no further. Try the 100% natural P28 High Protein Bread. P28 High Protein Bread is a formulated revolutionary breakthrough product. Packed with whey protein isolate, 14 grams of protein per slice, 12 grams of carbs, 8 essential amino acids, and made with 100% whole wheat. Fear bread no more. Build a better body with P28. Order today at highproteinbread.com. P28 is also now available at bodybuilding.com and many other retailers. Order now. Highproteinbread.com. P28 bread. RX Muscle approved. Shaker Pro has designed the most innovative shaker in the fitness and bodybuilding world. Shaker Pro is the only shaker where the powder and liquid are stored separately and mixed together at the exact moment you desire. Mixing occurs in the closed Shaker Pro system. That means no more mess, just a perfect shake, guaranteed. Preparation takes place anytime, anywhere, in the car, at work, or in the locker room. No need to transport separate ingredients with you. The Shaker Pro is an all-in-one solution for everyone with an active lifestyle. The patented Shaker Pro chamber system guarantees that the mixing and blending of the ingredients will always produce a perfect shake every time. Simply twist, shake, and enjoy. Find out more about the Shaker Pro at 4sportlife.com.
That's the number 4, sportlife.com. This is the RX Power Hour.
Welcome back to the RX Power Hour on rxmuscle.com with your hosts Nathan Payton and Ryan Bracewell. I've got to say, completely outstanding interview with Tom Prince.
Yes, yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised that we have a bodybuilder, but once they hear the interview, they're going to totally understand, or they've already heard the interview, they're going to totally understand why, but I think it'll be a little bit of shock, you know, when people are first looking at the page going, this guy's not a strongman or a powerlifter, but I think they'll really like it. I really enjoyed listening to his stories, and like I said in the interview, I think it's something that people need to hear. You know, if you're going to use drugs, you have to take care of yourself. You can't be dumb about it. You can't say, oh, I'll be fine. Because as he pointed out, you don't know. You can't tell. You can't tell when your creatinine levels are getting high. You know what I mean? It's not something you feel. You know, maybe you can feel blood pressure, but usually when it gets to the point where you feel it, it's a big problem.
Absolutely. You know, and the same thing goes as far as, yeah, kind of keeping up with the Joneses, I guess the saying goes, you know, as Tom touched on and we all touched on, you know, it doesn't matter what you and your buddies talk about or what your buddies are doing or what the biggest guy in the gym does, if you somehow happen to know. At the end of the day, you need to understand, you know, these people for the most part are probably guessed what they're doing. You know, if you're someone, you know, who's going to go about that route as far as in being an enhanced athlete, you actually need to invest and take the time to contact literal professionals, you know, who have knowledge in that area, you know, kind of experts, so to speak. Hand-me-down information works about as good as passing a secret, you know, in fifth grade, you know, when you tell a story about the blue ant who died rolling down the hill with an erection. You know, by the time you tell that story to 13 people, you know, it's a dump truck that ran over grandma who was taking a crap. So, yep. you know, everything gets twisted around, you know, and if you're going to take, you know, supplements, if you will, you know, if you're going to go about that, you know, go about it responsible enough to find someone who's actually knowledgeable in that area and seek their advice. You know, if there's a cost involved or if there's not, that's really pretty irrelevant. You know, if you're going to go ahead and, you know, kind of push your body to the limit, I think you ought to do so with more so than just hearsay or the buddy system, or God forbid, the thing, you know, that drives me nuts, Ryan, you know, bro science. Jesus Christ, the stuff I read on the internet drives me nuts. And I know the same goes for anybody, yeah, you know, in that type of position.
Yeah.
So
I was just saying, one thing to keep in mind is, even if you know for a fact, hey, your buddy does this, and I'm just going to throw out a number, I'm not, yeah, you know, whoever, say your buddy takes X amount of drugs and you're doing half of that, that doesn't mean that you can't be the one that gets fucked up and he stays perfectly healthy, or at least for the time being, because exactly, there's a lot of other factors. There's diet, there's your hydration level, there's, you know, genetically predisposed to certain issues. You might have a weak kidney or liver or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, just because your buddy can do this doesn't mean you can do that, because there's a lot of other factors. It's no different than how Nathan does individualized diets for different people. You could have guys that weigh the same. You know, for example, me and Travis Ortmeyer weigh about the same. We're both about 290. Our diets are different. We don't have the same diet. The same goes for everyone. You know, everybody is different. Some people can take creatine and see results. Some people don't. It's the same shit. You know, so everyone's going to be different. So don't go off the, like, I guess you want to call it the bro sign, saying, oh, well, he's fine, I'll be fine, because that ain't the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and actually what's funny is I spent about an hour talking on a thread to this kid who's 19, you know, wanting to start taking steroids and everything. And I just keep telling him, essentially in a nice way, I'm telling him he's an idiot if he does this, and these are the reasons why. But you know how people are, they have in their head, well, this is what I'm going to do. This other teen took it and he's fine, blah, blah, blah. You know, it doesn't work that way.
Mm-mm, not at all. And I think of the misconception, you know, Tom was very adamant about contact, you know, making those frequent trips to the doctor, getting the checkups, you know, just having some of the simple blood work done, you know, and he'd be the first one to say that simple blood work, you know, that you can have checks. We're not talking about elaborate, you know, long, you know, lengths of time and things like that. You know, if to remember, folks, don't be afraid of your doctor. Your doctor works for you. You know, so, you know, if you don't go to the doctor, you know, and to set, you know, check and see if everything's still operating as it should be, or if things are starting to get a little bit out of hand, you know, you're kind of an idiot, you know, because you shouldn't fear your doctor. He works for you. You know, if he gives you a response, you know, that you don't like, I mean, he's not really going to judge you, I don't think. His job is, if you need blood work to check and see if everything's fine, get blood work and check if everything's fine. Guess what? If it comes back fine, he's not going to say a word, really, other than, you know, probably be careful. If it comes back messed up, guess what? It's a good thing you did go to the doctor.
Well, you know? And I'll throw this out here because, you know, when I went to being as big as I am, I wanted to make sure my heart was good and everything. And I went and saw a cardiologist. And it's kind of funny because we live in an area where there's a lot of pilots. And when me and the guy were talking about different things as far as like tests and running tests, and he told me, you know, if you're going to get this test done, he's like, I wouldn't use your insurance. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's telling me about it and essentially telling me that a lot of pilots come to him and get, you know, their stress tests and stuff done, but they pay cash. And I'm like, what's the difference? And he's like, well, if you pay cash, essentially, as long as you don't tell your next doctor that you ever saw me, the paper trail ends here.
Right.
So, you know, I know a lot of people, I've heard guys online and people I know and stuff, they're like, oh, I don't want to go to my doctor because if I tell him I take this or whatever, it's going to be on my record from then on. Well, don't use your insurance, just pay cash, which usually is actually cheaper in some cases.
Yes, definitely. And unless you've already met the deductible.
yeah. I mean, essentially what I'm saying is if, as long as you don't use insurance, you can go to a totally different doctor and no one will ever know you went to him. So you can be honest, be open and get your health. You know, the thing is, if you're dead, you're not going to be very strong. That's all right. I'm going to say. And I think that kind of sums it all up.
Yeah, if everything's healthy, what do you have to worry about? You're going to have a piece of paper that says everything's fine and you can go on about your business or whatever. And, you know, if you get a piece of paper that says something needs fixing, like I said, then you know you made a good decision as well, because now you can get something fixed before it's too late. Like Ryan said, when you're dead, ain't no fixing that.
Yep. Well, and so we don't end up beating a dead horse. I think we're good on the show. Plus, it was such a good interview. I don't want to start ranting about different stuff like that. But
Agreed.
All right. Well, we're going to head out of here. This is Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton with RX Power Hour on RXMuscle.com. See you next week.
You've been listening to the RX Power Hour exclusively on RXMuscle.com. For more great shows,